Graves. "It's so pleasant to see you, Harry. I'm sorry that we didn't get to see the lovely Miss Rodriguez tonight."
I accepted the goblet. She had to wash her hair.
Kelly turned to Michael and offered him a glass. He accepted it with the inclination of his head, stiffly polite.
"I see," she purred. "I had no idea you were into men, Mr. Dresden."
"What can I say? They're just so big and strong."
"Of course," Kyle said. "If I was surrounded by people who wanted to kill me as badly as I want to kill you, I'd want a bodyguard about, too."
Kelly sidled up to Michael, her breast thrust forward, straining the sheer fabric of the body stocking. She walked in a slow circle around him, while Michael remained standing just as he was.
"He's gorgeous," she purred. "May I give him a kiss, Mr. Dresden?"
"Harry," Michael said. "He's married, Kelly. Sorry."
She laughed, pressed closer to Michael, and tried to catch his eyes. Michael frowned and stared at nothing, avoiding her.
"No?" she asked. "Well, don't worry, pretty man. You'll love it. Everyone wants to party like it's their last night on Earth."
She flashed a wicked smile up at him. "Now you get to."
"The young lady is too kind," Michael said.
"So stiff. I admire that in a man."
She shot me a glance from behind her mask.
"You really shouldn't drag poor defenseless mortals into these things, Mr. Dresden."
She looked Michael up and down again, admiring.
"This one will be delicious later."
"Don't bite off more than you can chew," I advised her.
She laughed, as though delighted.
"Well, Mr. Dresden, I can see his crosses, but we all know the value of them to most of the world."
She reached her hand toward Michael's arm, possessively.
"For a moment, you almost had me thinking he might be a true Knight Templar."
"No," I said judiciously, "not a Knight Templar."
Kelly's hand touched Michael's steel-clad arm and erupted into sudden white flame, as brief and violent as a stroke of lightning. She screamed, a piercing wail, and fell back from him to the ground. She lay there, curled helplessly around her blackened hand, struggling to get enough breath back to scream. Kyle flew to her side. I looked at Michael and blinked.
"Wow," I said. "Color me impressed."
Michael looked vaguely embarrassed.
It happens like that sometimes," he said, apologetically.
I nodded and took that in stride. I turned my gaze back to the vampire twins.
"Let that be a lesson to you. Hands off the fist of God."
Kyle shot me a murderous look. His face rippled. My heart sped up, but I couldn't let the fear show.
"Go ahead, Kyle," I dared him. "Start something. Break the truce your own leader set up. Violate the laws of hospitality. The White Council will burn this place down so fast, people will call it Little Pompey."
He snarled at me and picked Kelly up. "This isn't over," he promised. "One way or the other, Dresden, I'll kill you."
"Uh-huh,"
I flicked my wrist at him, my right hand in his face.
"Shoo-shoo, I have to mingle."
Kyle snarled, but the pair withdrew, and I turned my gaze slowly around the courtyard. Everything in the immediate vicinity had stopped, while people, black and red-clad alike, stared at us. Some of the vampires in scarlet looked at Michael, swallowed, and took a couple of steps back. I grinned, as cocky and confident as I could appear, and lifted my glass.
"A toast," I said, "to hospitality."
They were quiet for a moment, then hurriedly mumbling an echo to my toast and sipped from their drinks. I drained my goblet in a single gulp, hardly noticing the delightful flavor of it, and turned to Michael. He lifted his glass to the mouth of his helm in a token sip, but didn't take any.
"All right," I said. "I got to touch Kyle. He's out, too, though I didn't expect him to be our man, or woman, or monster."
Michael looked slowly around as the scarlet-clad vampires continued to withdraw.
"It looks like we've cowed them for now."
I nodded, still uneasy. The crowd parted at one side, and Thomas and Justine came to us, blazes of pale skin and brilliant color amidst the scarlet and black.
"There you are,"
Thomas said. He glanced down at my goblet and let out a sigh.
"I'm glad I found you in time."
"In time for what?" I asked.
"To warn you," he said. He flicked a hand at the refreshments table. "The wine is poisoned."
Chapter 26. Poisoned, I said, witlessly. Thomas peered at my face and then down at my goblet. He leaned over enough to see that it was empty and said, "Ah, oops."
Harry, Michael stepped up beside me and set his own glass aside. "I thought you said they wouldn't try anything so overt." My stomach kept churning. My heart beat more quickly, though whether this was from the poison or the simple cold fear that Thomas's words had brought to me, I couldn't say. "They can't," I said. "If I pitch over dead, the council would know what happened. I sent word in today that I was coming here tonight." Michael shot Thomas a hard look. "What was in the wine?" The pale man shrugged, slipping his arm around Justine once more. The girl leaned against him and closed her eyes. "I don't know what they put in it," he said. "But look at these people." He nodded to those black-clad folks who were already stretched out blissfully upon the ground. "They all have wine glasses." I looked a bit closer, and it was true. The servants moved about the courtyard, plucking up glasses from the fallen. As I watched, other young people, dancing slowly together, slunk down to the ground in a long, deep kiss that faded away into simple stillness. "Hell's bells," I swore. "That's what they're doing."
"What?"
Michael asked.
"They don't want me dead," I said. "Not from this." I didn't have much time. I stalked past the refreshments table to a potted fern and bent over it. I heard Michael take up a position behind me, guarding my back. I shoved a finger down my throat. Simple, quick, nasty. The wine burned my throat coming back up, and the fern's fronds tickled the back of my neck as I spat it out into the base of the plant. My head spun as I sat back up again, and when I looked back up at Michael, everything blurred for a moment before it snapped back into focus. A slow, delicious numbness spread over my fingers. "Everyone," I mumbled.
"What?"
Michael knelt down in front of me and gripped my shoulder with one arm. "Harry, are you all right?"
"I'm fuzzy," I said.
"Vampire venom, naturally." It felt good to have it in me again, and I wondered for a moment what I was so worried about. It was just that nice.
"It's for everyone. They're drugging everyone's wine. Vamp venom. That way they can say they weren't just targeting me." I wobbled and then stood up. "Recreational poisoning. Put everybody in the party mood."
Thomas mused. "It's rather ham-handed, I suppose, but effective." He looked around at the growing numbers of young people, joining the first few upon the ground in a static stupor. His fingers stroked Justine's flank absently, and she shivered, pressing closer to him.
"I suppose I'm prejudiced. I prefer my prey a little more lively."
"We've got to get you out of here," Michael said. I gritted my teeth and tried to push the pleasant sensations aside. The venom had to have an enormously quick absorption rate. Even if I brought the wine back up, I must have gotten a fairly good dose.
"No," I managed for a moment. "That's what they want me to do."
"Harry, you can barely stand up," Michael objected.
"You're looking a bit peaked," Thomas said.
"Bah. If they want me incapacitated, it means they've got something to hide."
"Or just that they want you to get killed," Michael said.
"Or drugged enough to agree to let one of them feed on you."
"No," I disagreed. "If they wanted to seduce me, they'd have tried something else. They're trying to scare me off, or keep me from finding something out."
"I hate to point out the obvious," Thomas said, "but why on earth would Bianca invite you if she didn't want you to be here?"
"She's obligated to invite the council to witness. That means me in this town, and she didn't expect me to actually show. Pretty much everyone was surprised to see me at all."
"They didn't think you'd come," Michael murmured.
"Yeah, ain't I a stinker?" I took a couple of deep breaths and said, "I think the one we're after is here, Michael. We've got to stick this out for a little while. See if I can find out exactly who it is."
"Exactly who is what?" Thomas asked.
"None of your beeswax, Thomas," I said.
"Has anyone ever told you, Mr. Dresden, that you are a thoroughly annoying man?" That made me grin, to which he rolled his eyes.
"Well," he said, "I'll not intrude on your business any further. Let me know if there's anything I could do for you."
He and Justine sauntered off into the crowd. I watched Justine's legs go, leaning on my cane a bit to help me balance. "It's a nice guy," I commented. "For a vampire," Michael said. "But don't trust him, Harry. There's something about him I don't like." "Oh, I like him," I said. "But I sure as hell don't trust him." "What do we do now?" "Look around. So far we've got food in black, the vampires in red, and then there's you and me, and a handful of other people in different costumes."
"The Roman centurion," Michael said.
"Yeah, and some Hamlet-looking guy. Let's see what they are."
"Harry," Michael said, "are you going to be okay?"
I swallowed. I felt dizzy, a little sickened. I had to fight to get clear thoughts through, bulldogging them against the pull of the venom. I was surrounded by things that looked at people like we look at cows, and felt fairly sure that I was going to get myself killed if I stayed. Of course, if I didn't stay, other people could get killed. If I didn't stay, the people who had already been hurt remained in danger. Charity, Michael's infant son, Murphy. If I didn't stay, the nightmare would have time to recuperate, and then it and its corporate sponsor, who I thought was here at this party, would feel free to keep taking pot shots at me. The thought of remaining in that place scared me. The thought of what could happen if I gave up now scared me a lot more. "Come on," I said. "Let's get this over with." Michael nodded, looking around, his gray eyes dark, hard. "This is an abomination before the Lord, Harry. These people, they're barely more than children. What they're doing, consorting with these things."
"Michael, chill out. We're here to get information, not bring the house down on a bunch of nasties."
"Samson did," Michael said.
"Yeah, but look how well things turned out for him. You ready?"
He muttered something and fell in behind me again. I looked around and oriented on the man dressed as a Roman centurion, then headed toward him. A man of indefinite years, he stood alone and slightly detached from the rest of the crowd. His eyes were an odd color of green, deep and intense. He held a cigarette between his lips. His gear, right down to the Roman short sword and sandals, looked awfully authentic. I slowed a little as I approached him, staring.
"Michael," I murmured over my shoulder. "Look at his costume. It looks like the real thing."
"It is the real thing," said the man in a bored tone of voice, not looking at me. He exhaled a plume of smoke, then put the cigarette back between his lips.
Michael would have been barely able to hear my question. This guy had picked it right out.
Gulp.
"Interesting," I said. "It must have cost you a fortune to put it together."
He glanced at me. Smoke curled from the corners of his mouth as he gave me a very slight, very smug smirk, and said nothing.
"So," I said, clearing my throat, "I'm Harry Dresden."
The man pursed his lips and said thoughtfully and precisely,
"Harry Dresden. When someone, anyone says your name, it touches you. You almost feel it, that sound that stands out from a crowd of others and demands your attention. When a wizard says your name, when he says it and means it, it has the same effect, amplified a thousandfold. The man in the centurion gear said my part of my name and said it exactly right. It felt like someone had just rung a tuning fork and pressed it against my teeth. I staggered, and Michael caught my shoulder, keeping me upright. Dear God, he had just used one part of my full name, my true name, to reach out to me and casually backhand me off my feet.
Hell's bells, I whispered. Michael propped me back up. I planted my cane so that I would have an extra support and just stared at the man.
How the hell do you do that?
He rolled his eyes, took the cigarette in his fingers, and blew out more smoke.
You wouldn't understand. You're not White Council, I said. He looked at me as though I had just stated that objects fall toward the ground, a withering, scathing glance.
How very fortunate for me.
Harry,
Michael said, his voice tense.
Just a minute.
Harry, look at his cigarette. I blinked at Michael.
What?
Look at his cigarette, Michael repeated. He was staring at the man with wide, intent eyes, and one hand had fallen to the hilt of his knife. I looked. It took me a minute to realize what Michael was talking about. The man blew more smoke out of the corner of his mouth and smirked at me. The cigarette wasn't lit. "He's," I said. "He's a dragon," Michael said.
"A what?"
The man's eyes flickered with interest for the first time, and he narrowed his focus, not upon me, but upon Michael.
"Just so," he said. "You may call me Mr. Pharaoh."
"Why don't I just call you Pharaohvax?" Michael said.
Mr. Pharaoh narrowed his eyes and regarded Michael with a dispassionate gaze.
"You know something of lore, at least, mortal."
"Wait a minute," I said. "Dragons? Dragons are supposed to be big. Scales, claws, wings. This guy isn't big."
Pharaoh rolled his eyes and said impatient,
"We are what we wish to be, Mr. Drafton."
"Dresden," I snapped.
He waved a hand. "Don't tempt me to show you what I can do by speaking your name and making an effort, mortal. Suffice to say that you could not comprehend the kind of power I have at my command. That my true form here would shatter this pathetic gathering of monkey houses and crack the earth upon which I stand. If you gazed upon me with your wizard's sight, you would see something that would awe you, humble you, and quite probably destroy your reason. I am the eldest of my kind, and the strongest. Your life is a flickering candle to me, and your civilizations rise and fall like grass in the summer."
"Well," I said, "I don't know about your true form, but the weight of your ego sure is pushing the crust of the earth toward the breaking point."
His green eyes blazed.
"What did you say?"
"I don't like bullies," I said. "You think I'm going to stand here and offer you my firstborn and sacrifice virgins to you or something? I'm not that impressed."
"Well," Pharaoh said, "let's see if we can't make an impression."
I clutched my cane and gathered up my will, but I was way, way too slow. Pharaoh just waved a hand vaguely in my direction, and something crushed me down to the earth, as though I suddenly had gained about 5,000 pounds. I felt my lungs strained to haul in a breath, and my vision clouded over with stars and went black. I tried to gather up my magic to thrust the force away from me, but I couldn't focus, couldn't speak. Michael looked down at me dispassionately, then said to Pharaoh, "Cereothax should have learned that trick. It might have kept me from killing him."
Pharaoh's cold regard swept back to Michael, bringing with it a tiny lessening of the pressure. Not much, but enough that I could gasp out,
"Reflectum!"
and focus my will against it. Pharaoh's spell cracked and began to flake apart. I saw him look at me, sensed that he could have renewed the effort without difficulty. He didn't. I climbed back to my feet, gasping quietly.
"So," Pharaoh said, "you are the one."
He looked Michael up and down. "I thought you'd be taller." Michael shrugged.
"It wasn't anything personal. I'm not proud of what I did."
Pharaoh tapped a finger against the hilt of his sword, then said quietly,
"Sir Knight, I would advise you to be more humble in the face of your betters."
He cast a disdainful glance at me.
"And you might consider a gag for this one until he can learn better manners."
I tried for a comeback, but I still couldn't breathe. I just leaned against my cane and wheezed. Pharaoh and Michael exchanged a short nod, one where neither of them looked away from the other's eyes. Then Pharaoh turned and, well, just vanished. No flicker of light, no puff of flame, just gone.
"Harry," Michael chided, "you're not the biggest kid on the block. You've got to learn to be a little more polite."
"Good advice," I wheezed. "Next time, you handle any dragons."
"I will."
And he looked around and said, "People are thinning out, Harry." And he was right. As I watched, a vampire in a tight red dress tapped the arm of a young man in black. He glanced over to her and met her eyes. They stared at one another for a while, the woman smiling, the man's expression going slowly slack. Then she murmured something and took his hand, leading him out into the darkness beyond the globes of light. Other vamps were drawing more young people along with them. There were fewer scarlet costumes around, and more people blissed out on the ground.
I don't like the direction this is going, I said.
Nor do I. His voice was hard as stone. Lord willing, we can put a stop to this.
Later. First we talk to the Hamlet guy. Then there's just Bianca herself to check.
Not one of the other vampires? Michael asked.
No way. They're all subordinate to Bianca. If they were that strong, they'd have knocked her off by now, unless they were in her inner circle. That's Kyle and Kelly. They don't have the presence of mind for it. So if it's not a guest, it's probably Bianca.
And if it's not her?
Let's not go there. I'm floundering enough as it is. I squinted around. Do you see Hamlet anywhere?
Michael squinted around, taking a few paces to peer around another set of ferns. I saw the flash of red out of the corner of my eye, saw a form in a red cloak heading for Michael's back from around the ferns. I turned toward Michael and threw myself at his attacker.
Look out!
I shouted. Michael spun, a knife appearing in his hand as though conjured. I grabbed the red-cloaked figure and whirled it around to face me. The hood fell back from Susan's face, revealing her startled dark eyes. She'd pulled her hair into a ponytail. She wore a low-cut white blouse and a little pleated skirt, complete with white knee socks and buckle-down shoes. White gloves covered her hands, a wicker basket dangling in the crook of her elbow, and round, mirror-toned spectacles perched upon the bridge of her slender nose.
"Susan,"
I stammered,
"what are you doing here?"
She let out a breath and drew her arm out of my hand.
God, Harry, you scared me. What are you doing here? I demanded.
You know why I'm here, she said. I came to get a story. I tried to call you and talk you into it, but no, you were way too busy doing whatever you were doing to even spare 5 minutes to talk to me.
I don't believe this, I muttered. How did you get in here?
She looked at me coolly and flicked open her basket. She reached inside and came out with a neat white invitation like my own.
I got an invitation.
You what?
Well, I had it made, in any case. I didn't think you'd mind me borrowing yours for a few minutes.
Which explained why the invitation hadn't been on the mantle back at my apartment.
Hell's bells, Susan. You don't know what you've done. You've got to get out of here.
She snorted.
Like hell?
I mean it, I said. You're in danger.
Relax, Harry. I'm not letting anyone lick me, and I'm not looking anyone in the eyes. It's kind of like visiting New York.
She tapped her specs with a gloved finger.
Things have gone all right so far.
You don't get it, I said. You don't understand.
Don't understand what?
She demanded.
You don't understand, purred a dulcet voice behind me.
My blood ran cold.
By coming uninvited, you have waived any right you had to the protection of the laws of hospitality.
There came a soft chuckle.
It means, Little Red Riding Hood, that the big bad wolf gets to eat you all up.
Chapter 27. I turned to find Leah facing me, her hands on her hips. She wore a slender, strapless dress of pale blue, which flowed over her curves like water, crashing into white foamy lace at its hem. She wore a cap of some material so light and sheer that it seemed almost unreal, and it drifted around her, catching the light in an opalescent sheen that trapped little rainbows and set them to dancing against her pale skin. When people talk about models or movie stars being glamorous, they take it from the old word, from glamour, from the beauty of the high sheath, fairy magic. Supermodels wish they had it so good as Leah.
Why, Godmother, I said, what big eyes you have. Are you straining the metaphor or what?
She drifted closer to me.
I don't make metaphors, Harry. I'm too busy being one. Are you enjoying the party?
I snorted.
Oh, sure. Watching them drug and poison children and getting roughed up by every weird and nasty thing in Chicagoland is a real treat.
I turned to Susan and said, we have to get you out of here.
Susan frowned at me and said, I didn't come here so that you could hustle me home, Harry.
This isn't a game, Susan. These things are dangerous. I glanced over at Leah. She kept drawing closer.
I don't know if I can protect you.
Then I'll protect myself, Susan said. She laid her hand over the picnic basket. I came prepared.
Michael, I said, would you get her out of here?
Michael stepped up beside us and said to Susan, it's dangerous. Maybe you should let me take you home. Susan narrowed her dark eyes at me. If it's so dangerous, then I don't want to leave Harry here alone.
She has a point, Harry.
Damn it. We came here to find out who's behind the nightmare. If I leave before I do that, we might as well never have come. Just go, and I'll catch up with you.
Yes, Leah said. Do go. I'll be sure to take good care of my godson.
No, Susan said, her tone flat. Absolutely not. I'm not some kind of child you can tote around and make decisions for, Harry.
Leah's smile sharpened, and she reached a hand toward Susan, touching her chin.
Let me see those pretty eyes, little one, she purred. I shot my hand toward my godmother's wrist, jerking it away from Susan before the fairy could touch her. Her skin was silk, smooth, cool. Leah smiled at me. The expression stunning, literally. My head swam. Images of fairy sorceresses flooding my thoughts. Those berry-sweet lips pressing to my naked chest, smeared with my blood. Rose-tipped breast bared by the light of a fire and full moon. Her hair a sheet of silken flame on my skin. Another flash of image came then, accompanied by intense emotion. Myself, looking up at her as I lay at her feet. She stretched out her hand and lightly touched my head, an absently fond gesture. An overwhelming sense of well-being filled me like shining liquid light, poured into me and filled every empty place within me, calmed every fear, soothed every pain. I almost wept at the simple relief, at the abrupt release from worry, from hurt. My whole body trembled. I was just so damn tired. So tired of hurting. Of being afraid.
So it will be when you are with me, poor little one. Poor, lonely child.
Leah's voice coursed over me, as sweet as the drug already within me. I knew she spoke the truth. I knew it on a level so deep and simple that a part of me screamed at myself for struggling to avoid her. So easy. It would be so easy to lay down at my lady's feet now. So easy to let her make all the bad things go away. She would care for me. She would comfort me. My place would be there, in the warmth at her feet, staring up at her beauty. Like a good dog. It's tough to say no to peace. To the comfort of it. All through history, people have traded wealth, children, land, and lives to buy it. But peace can't be bought, can it, Chief, Prime Minister? The only ones offering to sell it always want something more. They lie. I shoved the feelings away from me, the subtle glamour my godmother had cast. I could have taken a cheese grater to my skin with less pain. But my pain, my weariness, my worries and fear, they were at least my own. They were honest. I gathered them back to me like a pack of mud-spattered children and stared at Leah, hardening my jaw, my heart. No, I said. No, Leah. Surprise touched those delicate features. Dainty copper brows lifted.
Harry, she said, her voice gentle, perplexed. The bargain is already made. So moot it be. There is no reason for you to go on hurting.
There are people who need me, I said. My balance wavered. Still have a job to do.
Broken faiths weaken you. They bind you tighter, lessen you every time you go against your given oath.
She sounded concerned, genuinely compassionate.
Godson, I beg of you, do not do this to yourself.
I said, struggling to be calm, because if I do that, there will be less for you to eat, yes? Less power for you to take.
That would be a terrible waste, she assured me. No one wants that.
We're under truce here, Godmother. You're not allowed to work magic on me without violating hospitality.
But I didn't, Leah said. I've not worked any magic on you this night.
Bullshit, she laughed, silver and merry.
Such language. And in front of your lover, too.
I stumbled. Michael was there at once, supporting my weight with his shoulder, drawing my arm across it. Harry, he said, what is it? What's wrong? My head kept on spinning and my legs started to shake. The drug already coursed through me, plus this new weakness almost took me out. Blackness swam in front of my eyes, and it was only with an effort of will that I kept myself from drowning in that darkness, or giving in to the mad desire to throw myself down at Leah's feet. "I'm okay," I stammered. "I'm fine." Susan moved to my other side, her anger pouring off her like heat from a desert highway. "What have you done to him?" she snapped at Leah.
"Nothing,"
Leah replied in a cool voice. "He has done this to himself, the poor little one. One always risks dire consequences should one not keep a bargain with a sheath."
"What?"
Susan said. Michael grimaced and then said,
"Aye, she's telling the truth. Harry made a bargain last night when he found the nightmare and drove it away from Charity."
I struggled to speak, to warn them not to let Leah trick them, but I was too busy trying to sort out where my mouth was and why my tongue wasn't working.
"That doesn't give her the right to put a spell on him," Susan snapped.
Michael rumbled,
"I don't think she has. He can usually feel it when someone's done something harmful."
"Of course I haven't," Leah said. "I have no need to do so. He's already done it himself."
What? I thought. What was she talking about?
"What?" Susan said. "What are you talking about?"
Leah's voice took on a patient, faux-sympathetic tone.
"Poor little Poppet. All of your efforts to learn, and you still know so little.
Harry made a bargain with me long ago and broke it, once then and once a few nights passed. He swore to uphold it again last night and broke it thrice. Now he reaps the consequences of his actions. His own powers turn against him, the poor dear, to encourage him to fulfill his word, to keep his promise."
"They weren't doing it a minute ago," Susan said. "Only when you came up to him."
Leah laughed warmly.
"It's a party, dear Poppet. We're here to mingle, after all. And I have lifted no weapon or spell against him. This is of his own doing."
"So back off," Susan said. "Leave him alone."
"Oh, this won't ever leave him alone, Poppet. It's a small thing now, but it will grow in time and destroy him, the poor dear boy. I'd hate so much for that to happen."
"So stop it!"
Leah focused her eyes on Susan.
"Do you offer to purchase his debt away from me?"
"I don't think you could afford it, dear Poppet, though I think surcease could be arranged." Susan shot a quick glance at me and then Michael.
"Surcease? Purchase?"
Michael watched Leah grimly. "She's a fairy." Leah's voice crackled with irritation.
"Ashift!"
Michael looked at my godmother and continued, "A fairy, Miss Rodriguez, and they're prone to making bargains, and to getting the better of mortals when they do." Susan's mouth hardened. She was silent for a moment, then said,
"How much, witch? How much for you to make this stop hurting Harry?"
I struggled to say something, but my mouth didn't work. Things spun faster instead of slowing down. I sagged more, and Michael labored to keep me on my feet.
"Why, Poppet," Leah purred, "what do you offer?"
"I don't have much money," Susan began.
"Money? What is money?" Leah shook her head. "No, child, such things are nothing to me. But let me see."
She walked in a slow circle around Susan, frowning at her, looking her up and down.
"Such pretty eyes. Even though they are dark, they will do."
"My eyes?"
Susan stammered.
"No?" Leah asked. "Very well. Your name, perhaps. Your whole name?"
"Don't," Michael said at once. "I know," Susan answered him. She looked at Leah and said,
"I know better than that. If you had my name, you could do anything you wanted."
Leah thrust out her lip.
"Her eyes and her name are too precious to allow her beloved to escape his trap. Very well, then. Let us ask of her a different price."
Her eyes gleamed, and she leaned toward Susan.
"Your love," she murmured. "Give me that."
Susan arched her eyebrows and peered over her spectacles.
"Honey, you want me to love you? You've got a lot of surprises coming if you think it works like that."
"I didn't ask you to love me," Leah said, her tone offended. "I asked for your love."
"But well enough, if it is also too steep a price. Perhaps memory will do instead."
"My memory?" "Not all of it," Leah said.
She tilted her head to one side and purred. Indeed, only some. Perhaps the worth of 1 year. Yes, I think that would suffice. Susan looked uncertain.
I don't know.
Then let him suffer. He won't last the night with those arrayed against him. Such a loss. Leah turned to leave.
Wait,
Susan said, and clutched at Leah's arm.
I'll make the trade. For Harry's sake. 1 year of my memory, and you make whatever is happening stop.
Memory for relief. Done, Leah purred. She leaned forward and placed a gentle kiss upon Susan's forehead, and then shivered, drawing her breath in a swift inhalation, the tips of her breast hardening against the silky fabric of her dress.
Oh, oh, sweet poppet, what a dear thing you are.
Then she turned and slapped me across the face with a sharp sound of impact, and I tumbled down to the ground despite Michael's best efforts.
My head abruptly cleared. The narcotic throb of the vampire venom lessened a bit, and I found my thoughts running again, slowly, like a train gathering momentum.
Witch, Michael hissed up at Leah, if you hurt either of them again.
For shame, Sir Knight, Leah said, her voice dreamy. 'Tis no fault of mine that Harry made the agreement he did, nor fault of mine that the girl loves him and would give anything for him. Nor was it my doing that the sword fell ownerless to the ground before me and that I picked it up.
She fixed Michael with that dazzling smile. Should you wish to bargain to have it returned to you, you have only to ask.
Myself for the sword, Michael said. Done.
She let her head fall back and laughed.
Oh, my dear knight, no. For once the Redeemer's blade was in your hands again, you would find the shattering of our pact a simple enough matter.
Her eyes glittered again.
And you are, in any case, far too restricted for my tastes. You are set in your ways, unbendable.
Michael stiffened. I serve the Lord as I may. Leah made a face.
Ha! Just so. Holy.
Her smile turned sly again.
But there are others whose lives you hold and can bargain with. You have children, do you not?
She shivered again and said, mortal children are so sweet and can be bent and shaped in so many, many ways.
Your eldest daughter, I think, would... Michael didn't snarl, didn't roar, didn't make any sounds at all.
He simply seized the front of Leah's dress and lifted her off the ground by it. His voice came out in a vicious growl.
Stay away from my family, fairy, or I will set such things in motion against you as will destroy you for all time.
Leah laughed, delighted.
Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord,
is how the phrase runs, is it not?
There was a liquid shimmering in the air, and she abruptly stood upon the ground again, facing Michael out of his grasp.
Your power weakens with rage, dear man.
You will not bargain. But I suppose I had plans for the sword in any case. Until then, good night.
Adieu. She gave me one last smile and a mocking laugh. Then she vanished into the shadows and darkness. I gathered myself back to my feet and mumbled, that could have gone better. Michael's eyes glittered with anger beneath his helmet. Are you all right, Harry?
I'm better, I said. Stars and stones, if this is some kind of self-inflicted spell. I'll have to talk to Bob about this one later.
I rubbed at my eyes and asked, what about you, Michael? Are you all right?
Well enough, Michael said. But we still don't have a culprit, and it's getting late. I've got a bad feeling that we're going to run into trouble if we don't get out of this place soon.
I've got a feeling you're right, I said. Susan, are you okay? You ready to get out of here?
Susan brushed her hair idly back from her face with one hand and turned to stare at me, frowning slightly.
What? I asked. Look, you didn't have to do what you did, but we can work on getting it taken care of. Let's just get out of here, okay?
Okay, she said. Then her frown deepened and she peered at me.
This is going to sound odd, but do I know you?
Chapter 28. I stared at Susan in mute disbelief. She looked apologetic. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, I didn't mean to upset you, Mr.
Dresden, I supplied in a whisper.
Mr. Dresden, then. She frowned down at herself and smoothed a hand uncomfortably over the skirt and looked around her. Dresden, aren't you the guy who opened a business as a wizard?
Anger made me clench my teeth.
Son of a...
Harry, Michael said, I think we need to leave rather than standing about cursing. My knuckles whitened as I tightened my fingers on my cane. No time for anger. Not now. Michael was right. We had to move, and quickly.
Agreed, I said. Susan, did you drive here? Hey, she said, squaring off against me. I don't know you, okay? My name is Miss Rodriguez.
Look, Susan... Miss Rodriguez, my fairy godmother just stole a year's worth of your memory.
Actually, Michael put in, you traded it away to her to keep some kind of spell from leaving Harry helpless.
I shot him a glare, and he subsided. And now you don't remember me, or I guess Michael.
Or this fairy godmother, either, Susan said, her face and stance still wary. I shot Leah a look. She glanced over at me, and her lips curved into a smirk before she turned back to her conversation with Thomas.
Oh, damn, she's such a bitch.
Susan rolled her eyes a little. Look, guys, it's been nice chatting with you, but this has got to be the lamest excuse for a pickup line I've ever heard. I reached a hand toward her again. Her own flashed down into a picnic basket and produced a knife, a GI issue weapon from the last century, its edge gleaming.
I told you, she said calmly, I don't know you. Don't touch me.
I drew my hand back.
Look, I just want to make sure you're all right.
Susan's breathing was a little fast, but other than that, she concealed her tension almost completely.
I'm perfectly fine, she said. Don't worry about me.
At least get out of here. You're not safe here. You came in on an invitation you made up. Do you remember that?
She screwed up her face into a frown.
How did you know that? She asked.
You told me so about 5 minutes ago, I said, and sighed.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. You've had a bunch of your memories taken.
I remember coming here, Susan said. I remember having the counterfeit invitation made.
I know, I said. You got it off of my living room table. Do you remember that?
She frowned.
I got it. Her expression flickered and she swallowed, glancing around.
I don't remember where I got it.
There, I said. Do you see? Do you remember driving out to bail me out of jail a couple nights ago?
She lowered the knife by now.
I remember that I went down to a jail and paid the bail money, but I can't think.
Okay, I said. My head hurt, and I pinched the bridge of my nose between my thumb and forefinger.
It looks like she took all of your memories that had me directly in them, or her. What about Michael? Do you remember him?
She looked at Michael and shook her head. I nodded.
Okay, then I need to ask you to trust me, Miss Rodriguez. You've been afflicted by magic, and I don't know how you can get it fixed yet. But you're in danger here, and I think you should leave.
Not with you, she said at once. I have no idea who you are, other than some kind of psychic consultant for special investigations.
Okay, I said. Not with me, but at least let us walk you out of here so that we can make sure you get out, okay? You can't swing a cat without hitting a vampire in here, so let's get you to your car, and then you can get wherever you like.
I didn't get my interview, she said. But I feel so strange.
She shook her head and replaced her knife in her picnic basket. I heard the click of a tape recorder being switched off.
Okay, she said. I guess we can go.
I nodded, relieved.
Wonderful. Michael, shall we?
He chewed on his lip.
Maybe I should stay, Harry. If your godmother's here, the sword might be here, too. I might get the chance to take it back.
Yeah, and you might get the chance to get taken from behind without someone here to cover for you. There's too much messed up stuff here, man.
Even for me. Let's go.
Michael fell in behind me to my right. Susan walked beside me on my left, keeping us both in careful view, and one hand still inside her picnic basket. I briefly wondered what kind of goodies she'd been bringing in case the big bad wolf tried to head her off from Grandma's house.
We reached the foot of the stairs that led back up into the house.
Something prickled the hairs on the back of my neck, and I stopped.
Harry?
Michael said. What is it?
There's someone else. I said, and closed my eyes. I brought up my sight just for a moment and felt the pressure just a little above the spot between my eyebrows. I looked up again. The sight cut through the enchantment in front of me like sunlight through a wispy cloud. Behind me, Michael and Susan both took in sharp breaths of surprise. The Hamlet look-alike stood three stairs up, half-smiling. I realized only then that the figure was a woman rather than a man. The slender shape of her slim hips and breast obscured by the sable doublet she wore, giving her an odd, androgynous appearance. Her skin was pallid, not pale, not creamy, pallid, translucent, almost grayish. Her lips were tinged very faintly blue, as though she'd been recently chilled or dead. I shivered and lowered the sight before it showed me something I didn't want to keep with me. It didn't change her appearance one bit. She wore a cap, which hid her hair completely, one of those puffy ones that fell over to one side, and stood with one hip cocked out, a rapier hanging from her belt. She held a skull in her other hand. It was a real one, and the bloodstains on it couldn't have been more than a few hours old.
"Well done, wizard," she said.
Her voice sounded raspy, a quiet, hissing whisper, the kind that comes from throats and mouths which are perfectly dry.
"Very few can see me when I do not wish to be seen."
"Thank you. And excuse me," I said. "We were just leaving." Bluish lips curved into a chill little smile. Other than that, she didn't move, not an inch.
"Oh, but this is an hour for all to mingle and meet. I have a right to introduce myself to you and to hear your names and exchange pleasantries in return."
Her eyes fastened calmly on my face, evidently not fearing to meet my gaze. I figured that whatever she was, she probably had an advantage on me in the devastating gaze department. So I kept my own eyes firmly planted on the tip of her nose and tried very hard not to notice that her eyes had no color at all. Just a kind of flaccid blue-gray tinge to them, a filmy coating like cataracts.
"And what if I don't have time for pleasantries?" I said.
"Then I might be insulted. I might even be tempted to call for satisfaction."
"A duel?" I said, incredulous. "Are you kidding me?"
Her eyes drifted to my right.
"Of course, if you would rather a champion fought in your place, I would gladly accept."
I glanced back at Michael, who had his eyes narrowed, focused on the woman's doublet or upon her belt, perhaps. "You know this lady?"
"She's no lady,"
Michael said, his voice quiet. He had a hand on his knife.
"Harry Dresden, Wizard of the White Council, this is Mavra of the Black Court of Vampires."
"A real vampire," Susan said. I heard the click of her tape recorder coming on again.
"A pleasure,"
Mavra whispered.
"To meet you at last, wizard. We should talk. I suspect we have much in common."
"I'm failing to see anything we might possibly have in common, ma'am. Do you two know each other?"
"Yes," Michael said. Mavra's whisper became chill.
"The good knight here murdered my children, my grandchildren, some small time ago."
20 years ago, Michael said. 3 dozen people killed in the space of a month. Yes, I put a stop to it."
Mavra's lips curled a little more and showed yellowed teeth.
"Yes, just a little time ago. I haven't forgotten, knight."
"Well," I said, "it's been nice chatting, Mavra, but we're on our way out."
"No, you're not,"
Mavra said calmly. But for her lips and her eyes, she still hadn't moved. It was an eerie stillness, not real. Real things move, stir, breathe. Mavra didn't.
"Yes, we are."
"No. 2 of you are on your way out."
Her smile turned chilly.
"I know that the invitation said only 1 person could be brought with you. Therefore, 1 of your companions is not under the protection of the old laws, wizard. If the knight is unprotected, then he and I will have words. A pity you do not have Amarakis with you, Sir Knight. It would have made things interesting, at least."
I got a sinking feeling in my gut. And
if it isn't Michael?
Then you keep offensive company, wizard, and I am displeased with you. I will demonstrate my displeasure decisively.
Her gaze swept to Susan.
By all means, choose which two are leaving, then I will have a brief conversation with the third.
You mean you'll kill them? Mavra shrugged, finally breaking her stillness. I thought I heard a faint crackling of tendons, as though they'd protested moving again.
One must eat, after all. And these little dazzled morsels the Reds brought tonight are too sweet and insubstantial for my taste.
I took a step back and turned to Michael, speaking in a whisper.
If I get Susan out of here, can you take this bitch?
You might not as well whisper, Harry, Michael said. It can hear you.
Yes, Mavra said. It can.
Way to go, Harry. Endear yourself to monsters, why don't you?
Well,
I asked Michael, can you? Michael looked at me for a moment, his lips pressed together, then he said, take Susan and go. I'll manage here. Mavra laughed, a dry and raspy sound.
So very noble, so pure, so self-sacrificing.
Susan stepped around me to close a triangle with Michael and me. As she did, I noticed that Mavra leaned back from her, just slightly.
Now, just a minute, Susan said. I'm a big girl. I knew the risk when I came here.
I'm sorry, Miss Rodriguez, Michael said, his tone apologetic. This is what I have to do.
Save me from chauvinist pigs, Susan muttered.
She turned her head around to me. Excuse me, what do you think you're doing?
Taking a look at your picnic basket, I responded, and flipped open one cover. I whistled. Whew. You came armed for bear, Miss Rodriguez. Holy water, garlic, two crosses. Is that a .38?
Susan sniffed. A .45.
Garlic, Michael mused.
Above us on the stairs, Mavra hissed. I glanced up at her.
The Black Court was nearly wiped out, Thomas said. I wonder if that's because they got a little too much publicity. Do you mind, Miss Rodriguez?
I reached into the basket and produced a nice, smelly clove of garlic, then idly flicked it through the air toward Mavra.
The vampire didn't retreat. She simply blurred and then stood several steps higher than she had been a moment before.
The garlic clove bounced against the stairs where she'd been and tumbled back down towards us. I bent down and picked it up.
I'd say that's a big yes.
I looked up at Mavra.
Is that what happened, Stoker published the big book of Black Court vampire slaying?
Those drowned blue lips peeled back from their yellowed teeth. No fangs.
It matters little. You are beings of paper and cotton. I could tear apart a dozen score of your kind.
Unless they'd had an extra spicy pizza, I guess. Let's just get out of here, guys.
I started up the stairs. Mavra spread her hands out to either side and gathered darkness into her palms. That's the only way I can explain it. She spread out her hands and blackness rushed in to fill them, gathered there in a wreathing mass that shrouded her hands to the wrists.
Try to force your way past me with that weapon, wizard, and I will take it as an attack upon my person and defend myself appropriately.
Cold wash over me. I extended my senses toward that darkness, warily, and it felt familiar. It felt like frozen chains and cruel twists of thorny wire. It felt empty and black, and like everything that magic isn't. Mavra was our girl.
Michael,
I said, my voice strangled. Steel rasped as he drew one of his knives.
Susan said, why are her hands doing that? Can vampires do that?
Wizards can, I said. Get behind me. They both did. I lifted my hand, my face creased in concentration. I reached out and tried to call in my will, my power. It felt shaky, uncertain, like a pump that had lost its prime. It came to me in dribs and drabs, bit by bit, stuttering like a nervous yokel. But I gathered it around my upraised hand in a crystalline azure glow, beautiful and fragile, casting harsh shadows over Mavra's face. Her dead man's eyes looked down on me, and I had an abrupt understanding of why Michael had called her it. Mavra wasn't a woman anymore. Whatever she was, she wasn't a person. Not like I understand people, in any case. Those eyes pulled at mine, pulled at me with a kind of a horrid fascination, the same sickly attraction that makes you want to see what's under the blanket in the morgue, to turn over the dead animal and see the corruption beneath. I fought and kept my eyes away from hers.
"Come, wizard," Mavra whispered, her face utterly without expression. "Let us test one another, thou and I."
I hardened the energy I held. I wouldn't have enough juice to take two shots at her. I'd have to take her out the first time or not at all. Cold radiated off of her. Little wisps of steam curling up as ice crystals formed on the steps at her feet.
"But you won't take the first shot, will you?"
I didn't realize I'd spoken my thoughts aloud until after I had.
"Because then you'd be breaking the truce."
I saw an emotion in that face, finally. Anger.
"Strike, wizard, or do not strike, and I will take the mortal of your choice from you. You cannot claim the protection of hospitality to them both."
"Get out of the way, Mavra. Or don't get out of the way. If you try to stop us from leaving, if you try to hurt anyone under my protection, you'll be dealing with a wizard of the council, a knight of the sword, and a girl with a basket full of garlic and holy water. I don't care how big, bad, and ugly you are. There won't be anything left of you but a greasy spot on the floor."
"You dare," she whispered.
She blurred and came at me. I took a breath, but she'd caught me on the exhale. I had no time to unleash the crystalline blast I'd prepared. Michael and Susan moved at the same time, hands thrusting past me. She held a wooden cross, simple and dark, while he clutched his dagger by the blade, a crusader-style hilt turned up into a cross as well. Both wood and steel flared with a cold, white light as Mavra closed, and she slammed into the light as if it were a solid wall, the shadows in her hand scattering and falling away like sand between her fingers. We stood facing her, my azure power and two blazing crosses, which burned with a kind of purity and quiet power I had never seen before. "Blood of the dragon, that old serpent," Michael said quietly. "You and yours have no power here. Your threats are hollow. Your words are empty of truth. Just as your heart is empty of love, your body of life. Cease this now, before you tempt the wrath of the Almighty." He glanced aside at me and added, probably for my benefit, "Or before my friend Harry turns you into a greasy spot on the floor." Mavra walked slowly back up the steps, tendons creaking. She bent and gathered up the skull she dropped at some point during the discussion, then turned back to us, looking down with a quiet smile.
"No matter," she said. "The hour is up."
"Hour?"
Susan asked me in a tight whisper.
"What hour is she talking about, Dresden?" "The hour of socialization," Mavra whispered back.
She continued up the top of the stairs and gently shut the doors leading out. They closed with an ominous boom. All the lights went out, all but the blue nimbus around my hand and the faded glory of the two crosses.
"Great," I muttered.
Susan looked frightened, her expression hard and tightly controlled.
"What happens now?"
she whispered, her eyes sweeping around in the dark.
Laughter, gentle and mocking, quiet, hissing, thick, with something wet and bubbling, came from all around us. When it comes to spooky laughter, it's tough to beat vampires. You're going to have to trust me on this one. They know it well. Something glimmered in the dark, and Thomas and Justine appeared in the glow of the power gathered in my hand. He lifted both hands at once and said, "Would you mind terribly if I stood with you?"
I glanced at Michael, who frowned, then at Susan, who was looking at Thomas in his next-to-naked glory, somewhat intently. I nudged her with my hip, and she blinked and looked at me.
"Oh, no, not at all, I guess."
Thomas took Justine's hand, and the two of them stood off to my right, where Michael kept a wary eye on them.
"Thank you, wizard. I'm afraid I'm not well-loved here."
I glanced over at him. There was a mark on his neck, black and angry red, like a brand, in the shape of lovely feminine lips. I would have thought it lipstick, but I sensed a faint